everybody, and welcome back to the Growth Well podcast, where we explore the art of balancing professional growth with personal well-being. Thanks, as always, to my sponsors at MarketScale. Today, I've got an amazing guest for you. I run into him in the halls of Atlanta Tech Village all the time. We've shared a couple of meals, a couple cups of coffee together, but I've really never gotten to dive in deep with Chris Moreno. So today, we're going to do just that. He is often called Mr. Prop Tech. And what is Prop Tech? That's the blend of technology and real estate. He's an ATV advisor, like I said. He's an investor, an entrepreneur, a podcast host, an avid runner, and a husband and a dad to three little kids. So it's safe to say he is one busy dude. And I can't wait for you to meet him. So, Chris, thanks for being on the show, man.
Thank you, Josh, for having me. I'm so excited to be here, man. Always great. I listened to some of your other episodes. So,
thank you so much. I love the Georgia Home shirt you got on, yeah. And you're sporting the running hat. Actually, you're broadcasting from ATV, right?
I am at ATV live and in real life. I just saw Julie Pierre out in the hallway. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Shout out Julie and the ATV crew. That is Chris and mine's second home. Sometimes we were both very involved in that community there. But for our listeners that don't know you and maybe don't even know what Prop Tech is, you know, Tell us a little bit about you and what you are doing in your life, in your personal life, and, you know, give us a little overview of who Chris Moreno is.
Sure. Josh, well, first off, thank you for having me on. I'm really excited to have a discussion with you and go deep. I have a lot of respect for you. And you know, I get to hear your sessions and see you in action with founders. And it's pretty inspiring. And I think you take a lot of time to be intentional in the work that you do. And it motivates me and reminds me to do the same. So a couple things I think first and foremost is, you know, like I think a lot about community. And I think a lot about collisions, and collisions in a very good way, right? And for me, you have to have the awareness, and I didn't have this awareness 10 years ago. So the Chris Moreno of now, who's still learning every day, is still trying to get better just 1% every single day. And I'll share this as like, I think it's funny because I always looked up to the experts. And People started
The experts, right?
The experts. People started calling me an expert. And I'll tell you, 5-6 years ago, people started saying, oh, you're an expert. Oh, wow. You built companies. You know, we had successful growth. We had a successful exit about 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago. And oh, wow. My head got big, inflated, right? Oh, I'm an expert on this. Oh, I'm the person, right?
That's right.
I was like,
no, you're the man.
I'm not the expert, because the minute I think, and you know, people can call you an expert, but the minute that I think and I get fooled myself into believing I know everything there is to know, I shut off. I said, well, this is the way it is. You can't learn more.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I actually purposely kind of, you know, my whole thinking now has evolved into where I'm always trying to learn more. I'm trying to find the people who are going to disrupt my business. You know, the people who are disrupting the businesses, changing the businesses, and who can help us be better. It's not always about conflict or competition. It's actually about healthy support. So one of the things for me, Josh, like, you know, you asked a little bit about me. You know, I started off in procurement. I lived in California my entire life. My wife and I met in San Francisco, California, while we were building our businesses. When we were building, so we had three core businesses early on that we created. And those businesses, right after, you know, I'll start with Macy's Corporate. I worked at Macy's Corporate for a small blip, worked in procurement, worked in the enterprise, worked on technology rollouts with Bain, worked on centralization project of thousands of people across the country to help them do better work with technology. And I saw the roadblocks of massive corporations and realized I had to go to a startup. And I was living in San Francisco. So I found this little tiny startup called Laundry Locker. And the founder's name is Arik Levy, who I caught up with today. We still, you know, stay in touch. Great guy. One of the smartest people I've ever been fortunate enough to work with. And he had started this little locker company for dry cleaning and laundry. And so I joined him because I was using the company for about 2 years, and I helped him to grow that company. And then we created another company called Drop Locker, which was a back-end SaaS for other dry cleaners. And we did that with, we got to form partnerships with like Procter & Gamble and 1-800 Dry Cleaning and all these businesses around the world. It was amazing. We went to about 35 countries and I think over 100 cities. Unreal. And we built subscription programs. Actually, if you go to Kula Coffee downstairs, there's a subscription program. We built subscription for laundry and dry cleaning 12 years ago. And from that, we built another business. And this is what we were most known for. This was our bigger business. It was called Luxor One. And Luxor One is a packaged locker that Amazon, UPS, FedEx, US Postal, and anybody else can deliver a package to, and they could pick it up. And we evolved that from, we couldn't even give it away, Josh, in 2013, 2014, to where it's now in over 8,000 apartment buildings nationwide. It's in every Home Depot store in the world. It's rolling out with everybody. So, and I get countless people every day saying, I use Luxor, Chris. They'll send me text messages and see it. So we sold the business in fast forward, we sold that in 2018. We got acquired by a phenomenal company called Assa Abloy. They treated us and all of our employees incredibly well. And I stayed on for several years. Arik is actually still there today, which is awesome. And I got to learn all about integrations. And they let us run the business how we wanted to run it, which was very incredible. So I think one of the things that's evolved for me, Josh, is going through that challenge and that model we were bootstrapping to that exit and how hard it was. You know, it seems like this straight line, but in reality, it's like this all over the frickin' place. And so how it shaped me as a person is that I now have realized that founder, it's a very lonely journey. It was very lonely for us, right? We spent countless days, 100 days a year on the road before I was married and had kids. And so now I try to do everything in my power to be the biggest supporter of founders, especially when they don't sometimes believe in themselves, to give them that confidence to be the best that they can be.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, I mean, that really bleeds into a little bit of the next question that I wanted to explore, which to do that lonely journey. And I just helped launch a new startup in the past month as well. And I've done many of them. And just this week or the past couple of weeks, I've just been like, oh, I forgot how lonely this journey is. And I'm thankful for the communities that we're both a part of. But I'm curious, it needs to be, at least for most people I talk to, more than just about making money or even about being a part of a community, but it really needs to be about some sort of bigger purpose or bigger why. And that's what really drives people to get out of bed in the morning. So I'm curious for you, what is that? And how did you go about identifying your purpose and your why?
So there's a couple things. I think I'm still evolving and that why still evolves all the time. So when I was single, you know, and some people joke today, right? I say, oh, do you have kids? And they go, my business is my kids. Or sorry. Yeah. My business is my kids. Right. And when I was single and I was traveling, you know, I was like, hey, I'm going to take advantage of this. I'm going to travel to a city. I'm going to stay over that weekend. I'm going to work the weekend and then I'll travel to the next city and I'll even visit friends or people that I meet in that city, or I'll go adventure. So I was really fortunate because it actually saved us a lot of money. It was a great experience. And I think there's a challenge that people say, what about work-life balance? Like some people can just shut it off. I can't. And you know, some people might say there's something wrong with me. Okay, so what? Like I love what I do. And I've met so many people who say, like, you look at Warren Buffett and he loves what he does. He wakes up, he has the same routine. So how I think about it is, and it evolves into maybe some things we might talk about, which is as long as I'm focused on working with the right people on the right things I'm excited about that I want to keep working on and the problems I want to solve. And I spend my time and I have the flexibility to go home and see my kids, spend time with my wife. I get to choose where I want to be, when I want to be. I consider myself extremely lucky at the point in time where I'm at. So I get to choose the projects I get to work on. But so I would say that for me, like, we bootstrapped our businesses and we raised just a small amount of angel capital from just a couple people. And so I think, like, I spend my time now understanding and thinking through the things that I think I understood and how those like each company's a little bit different. Even every family office, I heard a great quote from someone here in Atlanta Tech Village who, you know, and he said, you meet one family office and you've met one family office, right?
That's right.
They're all so unique. Right.
They're all
so
different.
For me, it's understanding how I can help other people first, Josh, and understanding that, you know, I always got to say, like, be careful of advice, especially my own, right? Because I got so much advice and it was so dangerous because those people were helicoptering in, telling me what to do, and then helicoptering out. And I realized, like, you know, you're not going to make a big impact or change the world if you do what everyone else thinks you should do. And you do what every customer tells you. You know, as they say, you know, they would have built faster horses rather than building a car. So I always think about that. And I think about it in terms of my relationships as well. So when I'm working, when I find people who like to do the same things or get excited about the same things I do, like talking about business, you know, obviously my wife got a little tired of talking about lockers. I almost didn't get a second date with her because I talked about lockers too much on our first date, as a good example. I'm not in the locker business anymore, but I'm now in prop tech in the real world. And I love meeting with people who like to talk about real world problems. And I'm a very visual person. So that gets me excited. Like, you'll see, I move my hands. I like to see stuff. I like to use stuff. And Chris Saka, who I got to meet, Chris and Crystal Saka recently, same thing. Like, they love going out in the stars. We love going hiking. We love spending, you know, time on the lakes. But they're like, in reality, we spend like 75% or 80% of our time in buildings. So how do we focus on those buildings and that infrastructure? So I get really geeked out and really excited around people who want to solve the problems around hardware, you know, the shortage of labor, right?
Right.
And thinking about automation and robots and things that assist humans, whether it's software, hardware, et cetera, within the infrastructure of the way we live all of our daily lives. So that's kind of a high level, Josh, of what I'm focused on and what gets me really passionate.
Yeah, it's so fun when you have something that you're really passionate about and you can tell because it sort of just exudes out of everything you do, almost to a fault sometimes. It's funny you mentioned your wife. I don't talk too much about business with my wife. I celebrate wins and things like that, but you know, I need to put it away at least for that time when I'm with my family. But you're right. It's hard to turn off. I mean, I was falling asleep last night thinking of some alternative ways to solve a problem. Right. And it's just part of what we do as creatives, really. We're creatives. We're just creating business and we're creating value and we're creating better lives for people. And we're creating all these things. And so we're by nature to do that. We're problem solvers. But we also have to stay really grounded because that's like our head in the clouds. And I know I have a head in the clouds, right? So many of the people you mentioned, I think Warren Buffett, you know, has the same start to his day. And so I'm curious, like, what rituals and habits and routines have you formed over the years that help you stay the best you so that you can do what you do best?
Yeah. So I try to have a consistent day. And even if it's on the weekends, I try to have consistency. So thinking about how I'm setting up for the next day, I calendarize almost everything, personal life, professional life, et cetera. And I say, because if it doesn't get on the calendar, it may not get done. And or if it doesn't get on my task list. Luckily, I have a team supporting me. I do have people who I work with, and I work with a lot of other people, right? And I'm working with associations who have deadlines. I'm working with companies who have deadlines and expectations. And so a lot of and venture capital firms who are eventually wanting to see a return. And so a lot of it is, fortunately, I'm working with people who are very skilled on the technical side. And I'm much more skilled on like the partnerships, sales process. So I love like looking at processes, CRMs, you know, thinking about how we improve those processes, people management. So a lot of, I love like helping people make sure they found the right role or if it's the wrong role, being up front at the beginning. And I was talking about this morning about how to set up more of the cons ahead of time. Like, this is why not to work with me, or this is why not to do an investment. So I actually tell a lot of my friends, I say, hey, I'm going to invest in this company, but you should not invest because I invested. You should actually, if you're going to invest, like, don't invest. But if you want to invest, do it because of your own diligence, but don't ruin a friendship because you're expecting a return. And I always tell people, hey, assume this investment will go to zero because then we'll all be very happy.
That's right. That's right. I mean, every time you evaluate any endeavor, it really, you have to assume the worst case outcome. And are you okay with that? Mm-hmm. And also there's that concept you've probably heard many times about, is it a one-way door or a two-way door?
Yep. That's what
I love. You walk through it and it wasn't the right decision and you walk right back out with not too much scar tissue, or is it fundamentally life-changing for you once you make that decision, you know, getting married, having kids? That to me lands in that category of fundamentally life-altering, whereas even starting a business really isn't. I thought my first startup I would be in for life, and I wasn't. I've done now, I think, 7. And I love it. And that has been the flavor of my life. And so, yeah, I think that discipline and routine to kind of bring you back to what's important. You know, I saw a quote that you, or something you wrote on LinkedIn a couple of days ago. You were telling a story about a detour you took to see a loved one, and you ended it with, make sure you take the detour this week to focus on what's important in your life. And that really resonated with me, and because it seems like you're doing that. And so I'm curious, have you always been that way? Because for me, it's been sometimes a struggle where I very much over-index on work or closing a deal or whatever it is, and realize that I didn't take the detour, or the detour that I took was the wrong turn, because, you know, sitting here 10 years later from that deal I was trying to close, yes, it was helpful, but I missed out on something else. And so have you always been that way, or is there a moment in your life or your career where you're like, oh, I've got things out of whack and need to recalibrate here?
So a couple of things. Number one, the one-way door and the two-way door is a framework I talk about a lot, because, you know, I learned that about from Amazon and Jeff Bezos, is that, you know, you can make these decisions that aren't, you know, you can test. And you got to be very thoughtful about a one-way door, because you cannot walk back that back. And so to think about detours, you make a choice. Like, I was in California for an event. We were speaking down in Dana Point, and I was actually with a friend. We decided to rent a car and drive 2 hours out of the way to go see my grandma. Now, I said, hey, you know, we'd have to change our flight. He's like, do it. I'm going with
love that.
So he took that photo on LinkedIn. My grandma turned 96 that day, completely surprised her. We didn't even tell her we were coming. I just told my aunt, came there, saw her in Santa Barbara for about 45 minutes, and then drove back down to the airport 2 more hours. And it was wild, because it was, you know, so many people tell me they would give everything just to have a few minutes more with that loved one. And, you know, for him, as we were talking back, you know, he was talking about how his grandparents had passed and he wished he could have spent time. And he's like, absolutely. He's like, that was so much joy for him.
Yeah.
And my grandma said it was the best birthday she's ever had in her life. So that was something that I didn't always take the detour. I'll give you an example. When we sold our first company in 2018 and my son was born in 2009, you know, 2018, I think he was born like 10 days later. I didn't take very much time off. I think I maybe took 2 weeks off, but then I was still kind of working at night and answering emails here and there. And then I started, like, we went on a trip, you know, as a family to a conference, which was great. But like, I didn't take enough time off. But I think the key thing that I've realized with life is, like, there's a lot of my neighbors, a lot of mentors who have been very successful in their businesses, and they've realized they've worked so hard. Now they make sure they're at that practice at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
They make sure they're at, you know, they may play golf during the week, but they're at the practice on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. to 1, right?
Yeah.
So I think you have to set certain boundaries in your life, but also you have to be, so I'll give you an example. Like, I think there's a great saying, which is, I have very firm beliefs, loosely held. And the same thing.
I love
thing
that. I've never heard that. I love that.
I love that quote. Like, you know, that I have very strong beliefs. Like, I'm going to be there for, you know, a founder who's flying to town, let's say this Friday, and they're going to be in town for 3 hours. But if my son, if I get a call from school, sorry, I'm canceling that. Like,
yeah.
You have to have your priorities in order. So my wife, anytime my wife calls me, it's very funny because I'll be in a meeting or on a call. If she calls me right now, I will look and I say, sorry, Josh, I got to look at this phone call for my wife. Because if she calls, I know there's something up, because if not, she's just going to text me. Right. So, and so like, that's how I think about it, is like trying to set a schedule in my life, because the schedule is great. My wife is phenomenal at that, of keeping our, like, without my wife,
thank God,
keeping for my our family on schedule, knowing what's happening with the carpool pickup, what's happening with the food, what's happening with this. So she does it all. She has a way harder job than I do. My job is phenomenal. I'm so lucky the job I have of getting to work with great investors, founders, you know, real estate developers and owners and, you know, industries. But she keeps us all on track. And I love that.
Yeah.
So I think I would say this too, Josh, is like, I've been lucky that I say yes. So here, to your point about taking the detour, is I have consistently said, so, you know, you see a lot of articles that say you have to say no to things.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I say no to a lot of things, but I do say yes to so many things, especially earlier in my career, because it opened up so many doors. And
you don't know about them.
No clue. And if I didn't say yes to the crazy little startup that was going to pay me the least amount of money, by the way, but take more equity in, and then say, yeah, let's start another company. I mean, let's start another company and run three. We had three companies at the same time. It was incredible. And take a lot of risk, but then go and make it happen. We had to make that happen.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot about saying yes. Like tonight, we have a babysitter. So I'm meeting a friend for dinner that, you know, he didn't have to say yes, but I pinged him this today and I said, hey, do you want to grab a bite? And he's pinged me back. He's like, yeah, we're meeting. Let's do it.
That's awesome.
So like, I am a lot of things in my life, I make time, and you make time for what is important to you.
Yeah.
And you also have to say no to the things that just don't align. So what I try to do as well, and I had this conversation earlier today, is I try to be very intentional, and I've not been good about this, Josh, is I think I sometimes make myself so available. So a lot of people ping me, but I've tried to be really clear about what I do. So even like my LinkedIn title now, I don't just say like investor, entrepreneur, or, you know, podcaster.
Right.
I say exactly what I do. So it's so crystal clear to someone of why, like if they send me a note and it isn't clear, I probably won't respond because they didn't take the time. They're probably saying this to 100 people. But if someone takes the time to say, hey, Chris, I really enjoyed the podcast you had with Josh, and I loved how you talked about your love for hardware, and how I have a belief, Josh, that probably 90% of VCs disagree with. So I am very, very hardcore on this and non-consensus. But I believe most VCs will not invest in hardware. They say it's a low margin business and it's a very difficult sale and it's very expensive to get to market. And I agree with all three of those things. But the mistake they're noticing is that software churns like that. And number two, software is easy to replicate and build and hard to put moats on.
Yes.
Hardware is one of the most incredible moats I've ever seen in my life. And the churn, we had negative churn at Luxor. We had many reorders from the same customers over and over and over. It was unreal. And it turned into these flywheels. So I think it's more about the fundamental business. And that's how I think a lot about things is I love in real life relationships. So like that's when we hang out and like doing this and being very intentional. But I'm also very big on intentionality between communication. So when I get an email from someone, were they intentional of like sending me a personalized note? So no email I ever send Josh, and this is crazy, except for like a newsletter or on LinkedIn where I'm sending it to masses, but every email I ever send is to a person and I actually hit the click button. No, my assistants never send an email from me, which is really unique.
That is unique. I mean, that's got me thinking. I most are from me. There are a couple where I use team members, but they do say it's from them on my behalf.
Same here. They will say it's from them, but anytime an email comes from my name, I make sure I sent that. Like I hit the button, I review it.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's only one you, right?
Yeah.
And if you're giving somebody a piece of you, your knowledge, your time, your expertise, your smile, whatever it is, it needs to be authentic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a problem, though, with guys like you and me that say yes to a lot of things, even though we know how to say no and we do have guardrails around the things we'll say no to. There's still a lot of great opportunities for us to say yes to that fit our rubric of I should say yes to that. And that's not sustainable. And if I think you're a bit like me, it sounds where you probably say yes to too many things. So I'm curious, how do you recognize when you're a little bit off balance or when you've said yes to too many things or when you've become too flexible with your closely held beliefs? How do you recognize that?
I have accountability buddies.
Okay.
So Allie Merritt, who actually coined, so there's a debate. Allie Merritt says she called me Mr. PropTech first. She actually made me a shirt. I didn't like the name Mr. PropTech.
I don't doubt that she did that.
Yeah. I kind of like embraced it now because I've had several other people. And so another person says he called me Mr. PropTech, my friend Brian. So a lot of people call me that because I'm so focused on real estate and technology. And it's just my lane. And that's what I love. Yeah. And I see it. And I think finding people in that world who can hold me accountable and who I see frequently. So I think frequency is a big thing. Someone, another friend of mine, you might know Christian Reese, who's in the building. He's the CEO of Perlant and the Perlant. Okay. And he used to be a founder of a prop tech company. So he's now in wine and building a wine community. It's an Atlanta Ventures company. I met him through the community. I met him through John Birdsong, David Cummings, this community, right?
Right.
And so I think a lot about, you know, and Sarah and you've got AT, you've got Catherine, you know, incredible team here who are building this community. And so many people in my life who I hold accountable and they hold me accountable, I've met through this community. So I think a lot about the communities we're in. And one of the things I think, Josh, I did learn probably about 15 years ago, right as I was leaving Macy's, the senior vice president of HR was a mentor of mine. And he said, list out all these things, Chris, that you think are important. And I said, oh, of course, what I'm working on. Of course, you know, the culture of the place I'm working. Oh, of course, the pay. Oh, of course, the flexibility. Oh, of course. And then like down here was like geography. And what was funny is that like geography actually for most people actually tends to be really, really high on the list.
Yep.
Because if you're traveling an extra hour and a half, I talk to people who go an hour to an hour and a half a day and it's a good company, good culture, but boy, are they kind of sad that they're journeying so far 5 days a week, you know, an hour and a half each way, 3 hours a day.
That's 15 hours a week. And I mean, sure, you can be productive by taking calls or listening to podcasts and bettering yourself, but it's still 15 hours a week. That's, I mean, I either am working right here in a studio office I've built in the house, or I'm at ATV, which is 5 minutes from here. And it's just, you know, and I mean, I get it, I guess, but I think you've got to figure out where you value spending your time, right?
When I was in the Bay Area, you know, I lived 5 minutes from our office. Now I live anywhere from 4 minutes to 8 minutes from ATV. It's pretty funny. I did not, by the way, when I transplanted here 4 years ago, didn't know anything about the areas. My wife is from here, but we are our agent. And this is why actually I believe in real estate agents and people who are great at their craft. That agent got us this house. She found it.
Oh, absolutely.
We made an offer on one house. We got that house and we moved in and it was Chastain Park. And I was very lucky because I didn't even know. I had met some of the team here. I met John Birdsong before we moved in. Yeah. But I was like, oh, cool. Like if I happen to live somewhere near here and if it's within half an hour, I'll come. But to me, I actually make an effort to come here about 2 to 3 days a week. You know, we meet up on the Fridays, you know, and I'm actually trying to be here 2 or 3 Fridays a month. And then this year when Allie Merritt actually gave me a tour of the South Downtown project, which I'm super excited about because that aligns with like my long-term visions. I think a lot about like legacy, long-term, what is the impact you're leaving and what are you passing on to other people? How are you, you know, paying it forward?
Yep. So absolutely,
I try to work downtown once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. But what's great is it's been getting busier and busier and busier. So I actually go there and sometimes it's so busy, I can't wait for them to expand because I'm like, oh, this is great to see so many people there. But I'm pumped on it. And I think we need, one of the other things I think about is I love seeing stories of people who are building strong communities. I think there's too many, I'm just an eternal optimist. There's way too many negative people out there. There's way too many people, I think, you know, looking for the worst in people. So I always just try to assume the best in people.
Absolutely.
And I hope people do the same with me. Like if I accidentally missay something or misdo something, but like you, I think you have to assume positive intent and then you have to try and follow through. I think the other thing, Josh, to your point earlier about making yourself available or open is I try to set pockets and windows. Like when I do my podcast, I set a pocket where I'm available and I try to stream it out to people and say, here's a little bit more about my thesis or here's an interview with so-and-so. And now I'm doing office hours. So I used to do office hours. I'm bringing those back and that's been great where people can come in a group and do office hours. But I think a lot about, you know, who are building great communities and because it's really, really hard and it's a big investment. So again, kudos to like South Downtown and the team at Atlanta Tech Village, which I wish I had this 12 and 13 years ago when we were building our businesses, Laundry Locker, Drop Locker, Luxor, because we didn't have that in San Francisco. It was actually pretty competitive. And number two, you need people who are taking a risk beyond their thesis. And what I mean by that is willing to experiment. So if you think about it, most people only develop one type of building. They just do multifamily, or they just do offices, or they just do hospitals, or they just do X, parking lots. So I think what's going to be a big challenge for them, but an opportunity is that they're doing, you know, mixed use. So retail, you know, they're doing offices. They're bringing together community leaders. They're doing housing. And it's, oh, by the way, next to two of the greatest places to go see a concert, see a football game, see a basketball game. So that corridor and what I love about it, I'm getting like that amazing feeling inside.
You're jazzed. And we're going to have Birdsong on here at some point to talk about that project because it's massive. For our listeners that don't live in Atlanta, they've taken over 60, 70 buildings of downtown Atlanta, and they are just revitalizing it with a fervor. It is awesome.
Yeah. And I think like here, Josh, we get to experience at ATV, they're bringing in amazing speakers from companies like Invesco, and they have Chick-fil-A, and they have you know, CTOs, CEOs, et cetera. They do events and fundraising and pitching, et cetera. They're doing the same thing downtown already where they're doing tailgates. And they're free, welcoming the community in.
And they're fun. Yeah.
They create these opportunities that people can choose not to go to. But if you choose to go, and that's what changed my life. I didn't have that community here. I knew a few people. But I reached out to someone who I actually was in Boston. I said, who do I need to meet? I asked a few friends, who do I need to meet? And it led me to this community. And by taking that coffee meeting and the other person taking that coffee meeting, we collided in a positive way. And now I've got all these great friends. I love this community. People ask, oh, Atlanta. And I go, it's beat every expectation.
It's
awesome. And this is our home. And this is what I love. So I've planted the roots here, the flag. I love to pay it forward. And I'm trying to be a major recruiter for founders to move here. So I'm trying to recruit some founders from Canada right now to build in Atlanta. I think opportunity is the most overlooked city in America where there are capital dollars, there are company dollars, there are resources. We have a mayor and a governor who are absolutely focused on supporting business in every which way. And I love that. And so I think, you know, it's the opportunity is right now in the next 10, 15, 25 years to build a solid community. So I'm pumped. I get really excited about it.
I can see it. And I love that. I mean, the old guard here in Atlanta talks about when we got the Olympics in 96 and the, you know, what that did for the city. And I think that we're experiencing another kind of tech rebirth that's really being invested in. I think we're experiencing sports teams that are fun to watch, you know. And I think we have communities building, and it's really awesome. But with all that going on, I do have one more question about you personally and how you handle it. even though this recording is coming out in January as season, or excuse me, episode one of season two of Growthwell. So
yeah.
Thank you for being the inaugural season two. Currently we're in playoffs. And so I got a lot of baseball on the mind. And, but I always ask my guests this: with all you've got going on, it's impossible that you don't get thrown curveballs and thrown off your game. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it just happens. We're human. We get over-indexed in one thing. You get overexcited about what's going on somewhere else and you drop the ball elsewhere. And I'm curious, like, what is your go-to to bring you back into focus? What is your thing that helps you bring it back in and prioritize or refocus what you're doing, either in family or work or anything else you're involved in?
So I think if I'm losing track of the day, or I'm losing track of what I'm working on, or I feel overwhelmed, I think oftentimes I've learned early in my career, I would just keep working, and I would turn the midnight hour
muscle through it
later till I fell asleep. Crazy. And what I didn't realize is that actually, so what I do is I calendarize my time in blocks to where I will, you know, even like this is a long time of sitting down. I never sit down this long. So like, this is very rare. You actually do a lot of, I stand at my desk. I'm usually standing or walking, 80% of the day. I just hate sitting. And so I will stop what I'm doing and I will go spend time with my kids. So I will grab one of the kids, go play in the backyard. I'll do what they want to do. If it's playing with the trains, if it's hopping in the car to go run an errand, even if I'm taking a phone call outside with them so they can listen to daddy. And it's funny because like my son right now, like I think a lot of people say like, oh, you know, you got to separate work and life. Like if my kids want to work with me, awesome. Like I'm so excited. Like I want them learning about, like they're learning golf 5-6 years earlier than I ever did. Right. I learned golf and they're already learning as a kid. My son's already, it's funny, my sister was helping my son create a YouTube channel on trains.
And yeah.
I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Like, but don't
do it.
I'm not going to like have you working numerous hours, but if you do it for like a half an hour, 20 minutes, or you're already doing it, we just do a little film. Absolutely. So I want to get my kids into unique experiences. And I think sometimes we're too hard on each other around, oh, that's too much work, or oh, that's too much this. It's more about, are they getting great experiences? And I'll tell you, most of the things I got to learn in college, we're outside. I learned great stuff in the classroom, but a lot of the real world of working on, like, you know, volunteering with my local Halal, working. I worked at the Four Seasons. I worked at the Valley Club in Santa Barbara and Montecito. I worked at Valley Crest and one of their golf courses. And I learned so much from those interactions, working in a restaurant, working as a bartender throughout college, and seeing, like, my dad was a firefighter and police officer. And riding along with him and seeing things when I was a teenager. I mean, those things got me real world experiences. So, and I think constantly, like a lot of things I've learned from other people. So like mentors who I've had in real estate, not only nationwide, but a lot of people locally now I've gotten to spend some time grabbing coffee with, and I get to learn with them. But what's awesome is when I sit down with them and I go, wow, this is incredible. You built this multi-billion dollar portfolio, or you're an engineer from MIT and you're building this company. And they go, Chris, this is easy to me. What you're doing, you're helping me. I want to ask you questions. So I love that. I love when there's like, you can bring, I always try to think about how can I bring someone value? And then, you know, and it doesn't have to be transactional, but am I able to help them or leave something for them? Like I'll ask you, Josh, before we go today, like what's something I can help you with? Is there something I can unblock you on? And I learned that from my old boss, Eric Tornberg. So when I was at On Deck, which was a $100 million venture capital fund, I was in charge of our prop tech and real estate investments and our logistics company investments. And Eric Tornberg was all about, can we, if we're going to make an investment, how are we going to help that entrepreneur be the best that they can and support them, make introductions and unblock them? How do we help unblock and get out of the way? So that's something I always think about is, how do I not tell founders what to do? How do I support them on what they want to talk about? And it may not actually be giving them advice. It could be totally of just being a listening ear to them and just a support system and mechanism of someone who's been there before.
I saw a meme on LinkedIn today that said, micromanagers are people you pay to watch your best talent walk away. And I was like, wow. Good. It's so good. Like, I think that knowing how to support those you're working with without being a micromanager, but being a champion for them, being a blocker remover is just huge. So I'm curious, because you're so into both being mentored and being a mentor, this is the advice section. Okay. For people who want to build an entrepreneurial career, and they also want to have a family, and they also want to be a runner and active in a community and give back, and all of the things that you so seemingly easily do, but I know that it's more like a duck with, you know, fast moving feet under the water and calm on top. Mm-hmm. But what advice would you give someone that is either, you know, starting a company or thinking about going out on their own, or just really looking to retool their life so that they have more of this quote mythical balance?
Yeah. So number one is making, like, with my wife, we like make date night, even if it's just like we have a babysitter and we're going to go out nearby or walk down the street. It's giving her time too, like on the weekends, or trying to say, okay, hey, she's going to, I'm like, tonight I'm on it. Like, I'm going to help put the little one to bed. Yeah. We've got a babysitter, and then, but like, so she can go do her things. So it's not always about us always being together. It's about also being intentional. Like, can she hang out with just one of the kids, and I'm hanging out with the others? Or if the parents come, and then we can spend time together. So I think it's a lot of that, like finding little trips, little staycations, or getaways, or time blocks and chunks where, you know, I can spend time with the kids and she can do it. So I love doing that. It's funny if people in the neighborhood, they'll see me with three kids and like, oh my God, super dad right there. And I'm like, hey, it's just part of life.
It's part of the job requirement. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think also about like finding things that you really love. And don't let other people tell you that's weird or it doesn't make sense. Or like someone told me the other day, like, oh, I can't play that much golf. Well, I don't play that much golf. Oh, I can't travel that much. I'm like, well, you know what? I travel at certain times. And also, I think people think I travel more than I do because I'm sharing the content over time. Like, we're recording this now. It's going to be shared in a few months. But I think a lot about like, how can I share other people's stories? And what I love is I will, like yesterday, I was in New Orleans for one day. Yeah, but I was on from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. And I met with probably close to 70 people. And that wasn't 70 people one-to-one, but because I was in a happy hour and we were in a group of six people. I was at a dinner with 10 people. I was at drinks with six people at happy hour. You know, I was at a coffee session. I was at lunch. So meeting all these different people, hearing their stories, hearing these founders pitch, these investors tell their stories. So for me, it's finding what you enjoy. I actually enjoy that. Now, I love quiet time, so I'll go work out. I'll go run. I'll go for walks. I'll go do things one-to-one with people, or grab a coffee or grab a dinner. But so I think like what fills my cup is going and I like hosting dinners, for instance, in Atlanta. So I've recently been hosting a lot of dinners where I'll bring together about 10 people who are CEOs or innovators in real estate or technology. And it's so cool because people go, oh my gosh, I met someone who I'm going to invest in tonight. Right.
Yeah.
Or they're like, potentially, or, oh my gosh, Chris, you just set me up with a potential co-founder. Like, that is the most fulfilling thing in the world, to help people when you think you're just bringing people together for dinner, but to them, you just created a fork in their life that may change their lives for the better. So I think a lot about, how do we be more positive to each other? How do we support each other? How do we, and one of the things that, Josh, if you ask any of my competitors over the years of companies I've been at, they are blown away because I help many of them find jobs or make introductions of companies who became customers. And they were like, why would you do that? And I said, because they weren't a good fit for us. Yeah. So I'm going to send them to you. Why would I not help somebody to find the right person and be a good human? And I've helped several people get jobs that were my competitors, and it blows their minds. And I'm like, you know, we all have families. We all have things going on in our lives. And, you know, it's not, I don't worry about competitors because I'm playing my own game. You know, Simon Sinek is one of the people I go to, and I love the way he breaks things down. And I'm not playing a game of this year or this month. Yeah. I am with my founders. They have targets to hit and the companies I work with.
Sure.
But I'm playing an infinite game. I'm playing a game that I'm leaving a legacy. the dollars are just a scoreboard, and those are the KPIs we're playing. But I can't affect those. That I can only affect the actions I take. So if I can change the actions of what I do, the inputs, I'm putting myself in a hell of a place with my, you know, luck and my opportunity and all these things I'm doing to have great outputs. So that's and I always say this, Josh, I don't win alone. So I always,
nobody does.
Probably everything I work on for the rest of my life will be with great people, because I believe that I can never do everything better than having Josh as a CMO, having, builder of community, having David Lightburn, who knows real estate and, you know, knows more. He's forgotten more than I know about brokerage, right? You know, having John Birdsong, who's doing a hell of a job of pushing the team to move quickly, and Ali Merritt, who moves incredibly fast and makes incredible introductions. So I think a lot about community building, connections, and then who is that silver bullet and who's the best at what they do. I want to be working with that person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that that's key, because I remember interviewing somebody that we didn't end up hiring, and it just was a timing thing. And I really liked him. And he said, you know, I totally respect you, have really enjoyed my time together. And you never know, careers are long and life's about more than this moment. And so we might see each other again. And we've kept in touch. And it just really left a little mark on me that, like, you know, this startup that I'm working on right now, I love it. We have high hopes. I wouldn't be in it if we didn't, but it may not be here in 5 years. And so what else am I doing to kind of build that legacy or teach my kids to be great humans or be a better husband or whatever? So, man, this has been a great conversation today. Thank you so much for being here and sitting as long as you have. I need to, like, maybe have some bragging rights for that, for keeping you seated this long. But hey, thank you so much. And we'll catch up more offline about some of the things we talked about. But I've really enjoyed it. For all of you listening, thank you so much for being here and listening and spreading the word about GrowthWell. Thanks to my sponsor at MarketScale for continuing to make this happen. And until we talk to you next time, go out there and pursue growth well.